Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Saturday Neon. Saturday Neon, guys, designs and manufactures officially licensed collegiate logo LED neon signs. It's a company that was started by two Colorado Buffalo alumni, two former college roommates. It's Denver-based, locally owned and operated. They offer free shipping as well. Saturday Neon's a really cool company. Like I said, they design and manufacture officially licensed collegiate logo LED neon signs. Imagine a Bud Light sign or a Coors Light sign in a window of a bar, but now imagine that that sign is of your favorite college school. So a Buffs logo or a Rams logo. They manufacture and design all of those. They look really cool. They use LED neon, not glass neon. They're easy to mount. And when you buy something from Saturday Neon, it comes with all the necessary mounting hardware. This is perfect for your office, for your man cave, for your bedroom. It's a great gift idea as well. So check these guys out. Use code DNVR for 10% off your purchase at SaturdayNeon.com. That's code DNVR for 10% off your purchase at SaturdayNeon.com.
Hello, midday watchers indeed.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into the DNVR Nuggets podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. Use promo code DNVR when you sign up. We got an action-packed episode for you. I don't know how we're going to fit it all into 1 hour, Harrison. There's so much news.
I mean, there's nothing we love more than talking about transactions. We got a lot of transactions to talk about, man.
Transactions,
we're ready to give
indeed.
The people what they want today.
They definitely want some transaction news, and we're going to do that. So we got a lot to go over. We're going to talk about Bol Bol. He's out of town. We want to learn some lessons from it. What are the lessons that the Nuggets should be learning? You know, every time you go through and make a big decision, you should look back and say, what worked, what didn't, what can we not do again? We're going to go over that. Will Barton has entered the COVID protocol. So right as the Nuggets are getting ready, they're one game away from a six-game homestand. They're going to be without another starter. They'll be down three starters for at least a half of that homestand, it appears. What does that mean? And then the Nuggets have a bunch of guys they both have brought in or will be bringing in. You've got Rodney Magruder. You've got James Ennis III. You've got DeMarcus Cousins rumored to be joining the team here shortly. We're going to go over what all that means. Who's likely to play? Who's likely to be cut out of the rotation? All of that. And then in the final segment, we're going to have on one of my friends covering the Clippers for a really cool startup that will be joining us, Robert Flom. Rich Homie Flom will be with us later on to kind of prepare us for that. Is Vogt, are you joining us? I see Vogt just hopped in. Are you in?
I thought I was segment two, but I can hop on now.
You can hop on. Whatever. There's so much to talk about. I mean, there is.
Yeah.
I think I was going to do a notebook pod today because I went back. I actually did a list. There's 16. Here, I'm gonna share this because I don't know how many people. You know, I know a lot of people listen to this, but don't always just check out what we have going on behind the paywall. This is what the list looks like for people that don't know. I go in order. cut clips and talk about every single one of them. So you can see there's clips here and a little, there's voiceover to them and a little things highlighting all the different things I've taken away from the last couple games from a basketball X's and O's standpoint that I find a little bit interesting. So if you're not a member, you might want to consider becoming a member. These happen at least once a week, if not twice a week. So you're going to want to check those out, as well as all of the content written by Brennan Vogt and Harrison Wind. All that good stuff. If you only consume the podcast, you're getting roughly half of what we have to offer you guys. Let's start, though, with the bowl news, because I know you guys talked about this in the pregame show yesterday. A lot of people I know don't consume the podcast first and foremost. Bowl is headed to the Detroit Pistons, which is honestly a good spot for him. And that Pistons, sure. They're trying to tank. They're not interested in winning right now. He should be able to get some minutes. And for them to get a look at him. And the Nuggets got back a second-round pick. It'll probably be the 54th or 55th pick. It's coming from the Brooklyn Nets this year. It'll convey. They also got Rodney Magruder. Harrison, I know you guys talked about this a little bit yesterday, but what was your initial reaction when you saw that trade?
This feels like a trade we've been waiting for all season, and maybe even for parts of the last two seasons. You could see it coming. You could see the writing on the wall. My first reaction is, I honestly think it's a pretty nice return for Bull. I didn't know if he had any trade value. I was worried the Nuggets were just going to have to cut him at the trade deadline and waive him and get nothing for him. But they got a second round pick back. It is a really late second round pick, or it will be. They got Rodney Magruder, who seems like he could be, you know, a rotation player. And you did right by Bull in the end by sending him to a team where he's going to play. And if I'm the Pistons, if I'm a team that has no sights on winning this season, I would definitely take a flyer on Bull. I think he's worth it. For a late second round pick, I would absolutely do that if I was the Pistons or one of those teams. He's got potential. He's got upside. You know, he's just got to figure a lot of stuff out about being a professional. So I think it was the right move for both sides, but it's more of a return than I probably thought Denver would get, to be totally honest.
You agree, Vogt?
Definitely. Yeah, I thought they might have to attach a pick to move on from him. And, you know, Detroit's in – Wynn's right. They're in a spot where, like, what do they have to lose by giving Bull 15 to 20 minutes, right? And, you know, when Denver drafted Bull, when Denver took that seemingly cheap flyer, they were in that position. And a global pandemic and several important injuries later – they just don't really have room for guys that can't play, that can't be trusted to play night in, night out. Whereas Bull is more of an experiment, a project. So Denver's not in that position anymore. It did cost them a roster spot during a year where that was annoying, the first half of the season. But ultimately, they get that second round pick back. So I don't think, guys, I don't think there's too much harm or foul here in the end.
A 54th pick, which is what I expect this to be, 54, 55, plus or minus one or two spots. I mean, Brooklyn's not going to fall that far if they fall at all. That pick is basically a non-pick, in my opinion. You know, the last, like, seven picks of the second round, I don't think there's guys, like, clamoring, like, oh, we got to trade up from 58 to 56 to steal. It's like, at that point, guys usually have random, just obscure guys that you're taking. So, in a way, getting the 56th pick back is more of a trade chip. Now you have a second round to trade, because if you're picking at 54, odds are your guy's going to be available at 61, which means, you know, just as a free agent.
What also is happening in the second round these days is guys are telling teams, don't pick me.
Right,
let me become a free agent so I can choose where I go. So at 55, you're picking a guy who wants to be in the draft, who's probably like a level below the guys who are asking not even to be picked.
No doubt about it. And so, but nonetheless, your guys' point remains. I thought Denver was going to have to include something to get off of him. Because here's the situation with Bull. He's an unrestricted free agent here in 3 months. So a team like Detroit is taking a flyer on him. But if they like him, there's no guarantee he's going to re-up with them in Detroit. What you get in getting Bull now is you get a couple months to evaluate him as a person and how he gets along with your staff, and maybe to get him interested in staying with you. So he's like, hey, here's a team I know if I go to, I'll play, or what have you. So maybe this is the opportunity, although it's a very short window for Bull on his end. But here's the thing I want to really talk about with regards to this, because Bull has honestly not been that big a part of the Nuggets. I mean, he's been a big part of, like, the Nuggets fan experience and conversation. We spent a lot of breath on him for a guy that has barely played. My first thought, so I want to talk about what should the Nuggets learn from this experience. The Nuggets have had some good players, you know, end of bench guys that have gone on to have, like, breakouts later on with other teams, and maybe Bol ends up having that. I think my first thought with Bol is it's impossible to analyze his career to date without looking at it through the context of the pandemic, because basically his entire career has existed inside of this pandemic. And I think, first and foremost, not to make excuses for the organization, I do think that's part of why his development with this team has been so, has been such a miss. Go ahead, anybody.
I totally agree. I mean, like, NBA teams don't practice anymore, you know?
Yep.
Like, yeah. Nobody's practicing. Yep. Shoot-arounds are pretty just random and sprinkled throughout the season. So there's just – it's just not the same. It's just really not the same. And you've seen all these Nuggets player development stories in the Connelly era, the Torrey Craigs, the Monte Morrises, PJ Dozier. You know, all those guys were developed pre-pandemic. We haven't seen one come through during the pandemic. And I think just not having the practice time, not having the same hands-on approach that you had a couple years ago definitely factors into that.
Yeah, yeah, and factoring into feeling like a part of the team, like Adam articulated, right? I mean, quite literally, Bol has spent less time in rooms with these guys than he could have in another timeline. So I think that all factored in.
Teams are afraid to get together. I mean, to that point, it's not just has there been less practice time. It's that you have to kind of limit how many guys you get in a room because you don't want an outbreak that takes everybody out. So,
everything from hanging out to film to practice, all of it. So I think it's all mattered. And then with Bol, these were the areas of growth to begin with, right? This was a player who, and I'm not just trying to knock him, just keeping it honest, you were going to kind of have to hold his hand through these early years. And we're not allowed to hold anyone's hand anymore, literally. So it was really a rough time for the Nuggets to try to develop this guy. And it just did not work out. But, you know, I made the point on this show last night, Adam, that this is a failed experiment, but in no way a departure from an MO for this front office that has gotten here largely in part by taking risks, both for better and for worse.
I think that's another takeaway that they should have from this is that I don't think you can get discouraged from the misses entirely because the hits have been there. I mean, you have Jokic, you have Monte Morris. So then you have guys, I see the chat is talking about Jared Vanderbilt. They're talking about Isaiah Hartenstein. They're talking about Bol Bol. These are guys that I think, especially those first two, I mean, Vanderbilt's really having a breakout season and having a breakout season in, on a team that is kind of similar to the Denver Nuggets. Like he plays a role for Minnesota that he would in theory play for Denver. And Hartenstein, obviously a backup center. I've talked a lot about him. So these are examples of like, okay, why does it work out elsewhere? What I would say is I think there are important things that you could take away from, hey, could some of these guys been given an opportunity, a little bit more of an opportunity? But another thing I would take away, especially with regards to Vanderbilt, and I think it applies especially to Bol Bol, is that Vanderbilt took two seasons now with Minnesota to break out. Like Vanderbilt was one of those projects who came in first with a broken foot. So he had that time off anyway with Denver. And then trying to break in, it's like, hey, there's a lot of ugly basketball you have to get through with young players. We're kind of seeing this right now with Bones Highland. There's some young, ugly basketball you have to soldier through to get to the good basketball often. Not always, but often. And I think that is almost certainly, some players it's more true, other players it's less true that you need that. I think with Bol Bol, maybe more so than any other prospect, that was true. Like Bol Bol needs to go out there and be bad for one full season before he's kind of, you kind of get things through to him. And I just don't know if Denver could have gotten through that period to where Bol would have flourished in Denver. I really don't.
Yeah. I mean, he's just got to play. And that wasn't happening in Denver, and it wasn't going to happen. And he's just got to play, whether that's on a bad team, whether that's in the G League, which I think would have been good for him, but that route obviously didn't happen. He just got to play. He just got to get reps. He's got to make mistakes. I mean, that's the only way he'll rise to any other level than he's at right now.
And here's where I think the most important part is. So does that mean it was a failure? Like, should Denver have developed him more? Look, there were pockets over the last three seasons where I'm like, why isn't Bol Bol playing now?
Sure.
I haven't felt that way so much this year because I felt like this year there were, you know, Denver had kind of like moved into a place where I just felt like he wasn't going to be a part of the team. I think the team even felt that way. But there were times over the last two seasons where I thought, man, this was a great opportunity. Why not insert him into that? And even if you're going to lose, get, you know, gain some familiarity. And Denver didn't do that. So that's definitely one part of it. But if you're Tim Connelly, I think another part of it is when you are in 2015 and you bring on a second rounder in Jokic, you play him minutes. You got Gary Harris, you got Will Barton. You got these guys that were like flyers and you play them. I'm not sure the Nuggets need flyer guys anymore. And that's the real lesson to me of the Bol Bol experiment is I think it was so clear that it was always going to be tension between do I give Bol Bol the long leash to really go out there and be bad and maybe cost us games versus no, we're at a different phase right now. And to me, that's the real lesson. In hindsight, I think Bol Bol was in many ways destined to fail in Denver just because he fit a completely different timeline. And then, of course, the pandemic was almost the nail in the coffin where it's like, well, now we can't even develop him outside of games.
Yeah. And I wonder if something that goes along with that is maybe the route for the Nuggets, and this is the lesson they might have learned, is Bol felt like a home run swing, even yeah. though it was just a second round pick. They gave up cash to buy that pick. It's not going to cost them in future years or anything, but it was a home run swing. You know, we all knew why he dropped in the draft, and those issues that were on his scouting report definitely showed up over the last three
right.
years.
Right.
But if Bol hit, you know, it could be like a Michael Porter-esque return. Now, if you look at how Davon Reed came about, that was, I think, Denver trying for, you know, maybe a single and maybe hitting a double. And I think maybe if the Nuggets look at that and say, you know, maybe we try to hit some more doubles instead of swinging for home runs.
But here's the thing I want to ask you, Vogt, because this is the interesting philosophical question that I think basketball fans, especially in this day and age, the people that really lean towards looking at numbers or really heavily, are influenced by numbers, this or that. You look at that and think, well, Bol Bol was a second round pick. It's a home run. Like, oh, of course you try it. It's cheap value, big return. But I think the real price for Bol Bol was actually twofold. One, it became a roster spot, and this became, if you want to know, so I think the biggest problem was, you know, the pandemic, this or that, and them trying to get a unicorn when maybe they needed more just a role player. But the second one was they gave him an actual contract early. And this is another mark of the Tim Conley era was, hey, we're gonna pay our guys early as a show of trust, because when we do that, it comes back to us. I don't think that came back to them. They did not get the return on investment of saying, hey, we're gonna pay you before we ever need. Remember, they had another year where they could have had him. And honestly, if they would have kept him in that second year, they probably would have said, no way, man, this guy just doesn't have, you know, they would have seen what they said and moved on from him. But you pay him, and I think the real cost was he has occupied a roster spot now in two seasons in which Denver has had atrocious injury luck and really could have used a not home run lottery chip, like, oh, maybe this really hits, but just more of a, hey, this guy can give us 10 straight games without screwing up. And I think to me that's another one of the lessons here is the value of a roster spot, even if you have a lotto ticket.
Yeah, and then also just the evolution, right, of where they're at in stages of team building. And I think you're right that there's more utility in Denver probably filling in the cracks, right, than sort of layering redundancies and question marks and projects. And right. I like the thing that I want to sort of catch myself on is that method has borne, you know, it bears fruit for Tim Connelly and company. Right. It is a large part of how they got here. But there may need to be some sort of adjustment. Now, I get the sense that Malone is definitely ready for the contendership phase of team building, which will probably be less about those big swings and more about, like, Davon Reed could have and should have been on this roster the whole season.
You can go through all the guys they brought in. James Ennis, same thing. Like, is James Ennis going to be a star or fringe or starter? Like, no. Like, all the guys that now are on that we'll talk about in the next segment are all guys that are, like, unexciting in ways both good and bad.
I agree. I really like these comments here in the chat, and I think John kind of has the nail on the head. If MPJ's back survives, then the home runs have been hit, and it's just time to get those vets to fill the hole. So I think you guys are spot on. And I think, look, some of these moves here are concessions or signs of the front office starting to understand that. So
right. So that's kind of more or less it for me with the Bol Bol thoughts. I mean, there are some things here. I'll ask you this, Harrison, if the Nuggets had the G League team 3 years ago when they drafted him, do you think any of this is different?
I think it could be. Yeah.
Me too.
I think it could be. Yeah, of course. I mean, it's gotta be kind of draining. If you're a guy like Bol in a pandemic kind of season, when you come in as a rookie and you just sit on the end of the bench, you get some reps in practice, and you're just kind of by yourself. Like, I feel like if it was a normal year for these last couple years, it definitely could have been different. I think
and
so.
Here's the other thing with it is if he goes down to your own G League, because remember he went with, I don't remember who it was that he was playing with for a while
Chicago,
there.
Chicago, I think.
Yeah, it was Chicago. You're right. So Windy City Bulls. So when he's down there with the Windy City Bulls, remember they were not having him shoot very many threes. They weren't having him do a lot of the things that Denver really wanted to look at because that's not your team. You just send a guy there. They're doing you a favor just by playing him at all. And he went down there for a handful of games, kept coming back. I do wonder if you had the G League team 3 years ago and he's down there and he's averaging 23 points a game, shooting 40% from three and blocking shots, even with all of his flaws. You could just talk to people in a trade package and say, hey, look, man, I know you guys were worried about Bol Bol's health. You're worried about this or that, but look what he can do. He can shoot 40% from three, five threes a game. He can block a lot of shots. And yes, he has some weaknesses, but he brings these tools. And now all of a sudden he is a real asset to where you're like, okay, you can actually get value for him. Or even better, if he completely buys it. Again, I don't think this sliding glass universe would have been different for him, but maybe he buys in totally and it's better and this or that, and I don't know. But more likely you could at least just that more teams are clamoring to trade him instead of look, if you look at Basketball Reference, he's played like 300 minutes. Like there's nothing to sell him on.
It was hard for him. I talked to him about that. I asked him, being on a G League team that wasn't an affiliate of the Nuggets, he felt separated and from what the Nuggets were doing, and literally geographically so, but then I think also just, I mean, Vlatko, a guy who's been a professional for a long time, had a much easier time sort of reaching out to coaches, right, trying to get his own feedback, trying to keep that relationship intact. And Bol, I think, needed more help in terms of who was going to show initiative there. And that was always more difficult when he was playing on a team that literally was not affiliated with Denver.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's hit our first break. On the other side, though, there's a whole bunch of other moves that we have to talk about that happened within the last few days, starting with Will Barton entering COVID protocols. We'll talk about all that on the other side.
Breckenridge Brewery is the official beer of DNVR. If you guys stop by the DNVR, we've got Breck Brew Seltzers. We're stocked with Breck Brew Seltzers, so stop in, try one of those. Breckenridge Brewery, they're also teaming up with the National Parks Conservation Association this year. The tragic fires in Colorado were absolutely devastating for so many last year. And Breck is donating 1% of all their profits this summer to the National Parks Conservation Association. So if you buy a pint or a pack of Breck Brews, a pack of seltzers, you're donating that 1% to a great cause. So check out Breck Brew at your local liquor store, local grocery store. If you stop into the DNVR bar, of course, we've got tons and tons of Breck Brews there that you can try, sample a few. Also, got to talk about Ball. We're sponsored by Ball across the entire DNVR network, as in Ball Arena, where the Nuggets play. Ball reached out to us because they're looking for production technicians to fill their Golden plant right here in Golden, Colorado. If you want more information, jobs.ball.com and search for Golden or text Golden to 77222. Ball's been leading global sustainability efforts for decades. So if you want to join up with them, the position is on the front line of their aluminum beverage can production process at Ball. They offer a competitive $27.39 per hour wage with potential for increases at 6, 12, and 18 months on the job. If you want more info, jobs.ball.com and search for Golden or text Golden to 77222.
All right, back here, DNVR Nuggets podcast. Don't forget, guys, we got our party bus this weekend on Sunday. I can't wait for it. Very excited for that. Nuggets, Jazz. We might have DeMarcus Cousins. It's going to be a weird game. DeMarcus Cousins is going to be playing. We might get some James Ennis. It's going to be wild. So Will Barton today has announced in the COVID protocols. I'll share my first thought on this to begin with. I'm knocking on wood here. My biggest hope is I hope it ends here. We've seen so many times where it's like, oh, one player tests positive, then two, three more, then five more. And then all of a sudden it's like, now you have an outbreak. To me, this is the worst time for the team to have an outbreak. I've not said this out loud or texted it anywhere because I didn't want it out there, but I'm thinking this 6-game homestand is so important. You play all the next 5 games for the Nuggets are against all of the teams that are clumped up in the standings. You got the Clippers, you got the Lakers, you've got who do you have ahead of you? Memphis coming up. So you got Utah. So you got all these games that are really important and at home, a chance to develop some chemistry, rhythm, all of these different things. I think the Nuggets can withstand Will Barton being out, even though he's one of the very few guards that Denver can run pick and roll with. I think they're really going to miss him. But without him, maybe I still think Denver can withstand it. What do you think, Harrison?
I think Denver can withstand it. I mean, they looked pretty good without him earlier in December. They beat the Spurs by 15 points. They beat the Wizards by 6 points without him. Will's having a rough stretch, man. I was talking about this on the post-game show last night. He hasn't shot over 50% from the floor in a game since the beginning of December, since like December 5th. It's been over a month where he hasn't shot 50% or better in a game. His efficiency is way down. His shot quality is way down. I mean, he's just like going into the lane and praying he gets a foul call, and he's not getting them. And he's just throwing stuff up in there. And his defense, I don't think, has been great. Denver is just like, their guard situation is such a mess. Thank God they have Monte Morris back, where you just kind of need Barton to just produce points, even if it's coming in an inefficient manner right now. But I think Denver can be okay. They won two games in early December without him pretty convincingly.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's something to the way they looked with Reed starting those two games, right? And it could be, or playing in those two games, and it could be the smallest possible sample size, but
right,
that starting lineup has lacked point of attack defense since Aaron Gordon sort of taken a step back on defense as his workload has really just grown and grown and grown. They absolutely can survive Barton absence right now, but the one thing I will say is Barton's been a better playmaker of late than he's gotten credit for. And while his drives have looked futile as a scorer, he's found some success driving and dishing, finding other guys. Jamichael Green, who's moved well off ball of late. So without Barton, either Monte or Aaron Gordon needs to be willing to drive. And that is one thing that Barton does that drives us nuts at times. But think about how lacking it is on this roster. Just put your head down, penetrate, collapse the defense, make a play. It doesn't happen. And so if Barton's not going to be there, Monte or Aaron need to be willing, I think, in that area.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it that it's good that Monte is back, but it is one of those things where Denver just went through a stretch with Barton, no Monte. Now you have Monte, no Barton. Those are the two guys that can run a pick and roll, get to the free throw line and elevate for a jumper and knock it down. So I do think it's going to handicap. The one thing I'll say with Barton, you know, I think it's massively overstated how much he can hijack possessions, but there's no question he can. Like, there's no question that at his worst, he is taking way too much of the offensive usage and just calling his own number. And, you know, now you get into a situation where the guys that will be playing, you're talking about maybe a Bones. I mean, I think Bones will be playing a lot, but you got a Faku, you got a Rivers, and then these other guys we're going to talk about, that I think are going to be more reliant on Jokic than before. Yeah. The question is, can they keep the defense honest? And that's going to be the real question. So first of all, hopefully Barton has mild symptoms, as I had over this last week, very, very mild symptoms, and is able to bounce back very quickly when he gets back. But let's talk about the guys they are bringing in. So you've already got Davon Reed, who's going to be with the team for the rest of the year on a two-way. We wondered if this would be the option they went. Sure enough, the Nuggets let Peter Cornelly go. I don't think Cornelly was part of Denver's long-term plans. It was pretty obvious. So that, to me, is a pretty lateral move. It also saves Denver some money. You got Rodney Magruder. You've got James Ennis. Harrison, where do you want to start with these guys?
Well, it seems like Ennis is maybe the more natural Barton replacement. I mean, none of them are really Barton, because what you lose with Barton, even though you know his playmaking hasn't been as good this year as it's been in recent years, he's still averaging 4.2 assists, which is a career high and the second most on the Nuggets. It's tied with Monte Morris for the second most assists per game on Denver. So I don't think Ennis or Rodney Magruder really have that playmaking ability. Magruder's more of a shooter. Ennis is more, you know, of a 3-and-D wing. But Ennis, man, is just, if you're looking for a player that kind of symbolizes this almost fake regular season that we're in, it's James Ennis. He's already played two games with Brooklyn. He's already played two games with the Clippers. Now he's probably going to play two games with the Nuggets. And, you know, he's a 6'6 wing who's like a 3-and-D guy, like I said, and he's one of the best replacement players on the market right now.
It's so funny. I put this on Twitter, but James Ennis played with the Nets against the Clippers and then almost immediately played for the Clippers against the Nets. And then almost immediately after that now is going to play for the Nuggets against the Clippers. Like, think about how weird that is. to go against the Clippers, play for the Clippers, and then against the Clippers all within the course of like 3 weeks. It's just so bizarre,
so,
man.
So weird.
Ennis is interesting. So Ennis, to me, and you know, reach out to some people with the team to say, hey, get quick scouting report. What do you think? You know, a guy that is not going to stand out in any way, it sounds like. You know, he's not going to – he's a 36% three-point shooter, career three-point shooter, and he's the equivalent of that at everything. The equivalent of a 36% three-point shooter.
It's like a C+.
Yeah, he's like a C+ of everything. He's not going to like – you can count on him to make some shots. You can count on him to get some rebounds, guard some guys, you know, make certain plays. And to me, I actually think that's okay. I actually like that. I actually think when I hear that, I think, and you look at his size, probably more of a wing, like a more of a bigger guy. And again, the more guys are willing to rely on Jokic, the better, the happier I am, especially if those guys are here to make an impression.
Yeah, I'm happy about it too. I'm also just kind of scared about it as well.
Why? What makes you scared?
I mean, do we really want to put more on Nikola Jokic's plate? The Nuggets don't really have a choice, but you know, think about all the responsibility he has night in, night out that he's already had this season. Now he's just going to have more.
Yeah, but I don't think it's more responsibility to say the ball plate you play through him. It's more responsibility if he was playing more minutes. But I think if he's out on the court, you might as well play through him as opposed to having guys that are, you know, yeah, maybe feel too confident to call their own number. And that's more what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I gotcha.
So, then, go ahead. Oh,
go ahead. Well, I have rotation questions. So is James going to play, right? I mean, and if he does, is that over Austin Rivers?
No. I don't think any of the regulars are going to be knocked from the rotation. Other than perhaps Bones Highland is the only guy I sort of look at. And here's part of why. We've seen a lot of minutes that are Faku, Bones, Austin Rivers. I mean, is Austin Rivers a three? No. Is Bones a three? Like, that's naturally sort of having one guy out of position.
Right.
So I don't think, I mean, Austin Rivers just had an enormous game. Michael Malone clearly trusts his defense, if nothing else.
Right.
And then Faku, look, Malone will he's never going to not play Faku. Those are his guys. So to me, but we saw Bones get benched in this last game. Bones, I have a lot of notes on him up on the list because he's in a really interesting spot. To me, the Nuggets desperately need Bones Highland. I'm just not sure Bones Highland can deliver for him. He's sort of in that bowl situation where to get the best, you probably are going to have to survive a lot of the worst. And he's one of those guys that can, over the last two games, has both given you massive leads and lost massive leads with certain mistakes he's made or great plays he's made. And as much as I am a guy that would love to see him play through those mistakes, I'm not sure Malone has the stomach for that at this point of the season. So that's why he's the guy that might get bumped.
Yeah, I could see it. Thinking about a bench unit, though, with Faku Campaso, Roddy Magruder, Austin Rivers, Jeff Green, and Zeke Nagy.
DeMarcus Cousins.
I'm scared to death, man.
What could it be, worse wind? I mean, like...
No, well, if you have Barton, it's better. And if you have Bones, that helps. Like, are we just going to have like five guys standing around the perimeter and passing it back and forth to each other?
Yeah, I mean, that is exactly what you would have. Or just DeMarcus Cousins posting up, which, I mean, we'll see what happens there. But, you know, I think Austin Rivers is likeliest to move into the starting lineup. We've seen Davon Reed move into that role before. But I've mentioned a lot of times, Austin Rivers can really defend. Last two games, and I put this on the list, he's been a little bit better at making quick decisions. We know Michael Malone has talked about that being a key for him. So we can all be a little hopeful that he breaks a career-long habit of liking to play slow and hold the ball and really follow this two-game trend of being more deliberate. But Monte and Austin Rivers, to me, is enough spacing. Like, in the backcourt, it's not ideal, but it's better than what you were getting before. So maybe that means your backcourt now on the bench is Faku and Bones, which, again, has actually had some success this season when those two guys have shared the court together.
Wind, who's more likely to play, James or Rodney, in your estimation? Who plays more, rather?
I'd say Ennis, just because he's got the size.
Right.
And
then as the defense, there. Maybe the hope with that group is they can at least get some stops, right? Or maybe there's more capability there. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But it's good. I mean, the Cousins and Ennis thing, you can at least look at it and say wing, backup center, right? So structurally, like just roster construction, you go, okay, thumbs up there.
So let's go like this. This actually is the best way to go about this as we're trying to visualize it. So I think Monte Morris is definitely starting. And I think, man, I don't know. Austin Rivers or Davon Reed are probably the next guys up. I think it'll be Austin Rivers, but I don't know.
Austin, I don't feel any pressure, Rivers.
So you think it's going to be him. So here's our backcourt rotation, guys. And then I think Faku is just in. I would be shocked if whatever – I mean, Faku's in. So, Vogt, I'll go with you first. Rank who you expect to play the a majority of minutes between the following guys. Bones Highland, Davon Reed, Rodney Magruder, James Ennis.
I would think Reed right now.
Above Bones.
I mean, the only thing is then because Bones, I don't see Bones coming all the way out of the rotation after all of this, but
yeah.
I do see Reed being a guy that Malone personally trusts more now, right?
Maybe. What do you think, Wind? I want to hear you. I want to hear a ranking here.
I think Bones still is in the pole position. Now, he can lose that position during a game, like he lost it last night, or he can lose it if he has a couple more real stinkers. But I think right now, I mean, he just had that great game against Sacramento. It was only 4 days ago. Yeah. 4 days ago. Yeah. So, and we know Mike Malone was watching that one from his basement. So I just think right now it's still Bones, but the leash is just a little bit shorter, maybe a lot bit shorter than it was, you know, a few weeks back.
That's right.
I'm on record saying I think the 6-game homestand is a breakout one for Bones. I hope he gets the opportunity for it because I really do think there's just something to young players not having to be on the road. Like it's just, that's the hardest. We always hear this. It's the hardest part of the NBA is all the travel and getting yourself ready. The fact that he's going to wake up in his own bed for like 12 straight days, to me, I'm like, okay, that's where he can really get going and cement this. I think either way, he's the first guy, but I also agree, Harrison, I would not be surprised if he got benched one or more games here in the near future.
I think that order right there.
Yeah, and Reed, then Ennis, then Magruder. Exactly what I think as well. Davon Reed, again, he's just been with the team for so long, going all the way back to Summer League. So when you talk about what do you need to learn, he doesn't need to learn that much. Yeah. He already knows all the plays. He's familiar. He has got chemistry. So I think that's it. But I definitely see James Ennis over Magruder over this next stretch. And I wouldn't be surprised if he plays, especially I'm not sure Aaron Gordon. There's a back-to-back here, obviously Saturday, Sunday, where they play Lakers, then Jazz. Maybe Aaron Gordon sits one of those games out. As I watch the tape on him, he looks like a guy to me that is definitely limiting how hard he plays right now. And that tells me he's probably a little bit banged up.
Yeah, I first noticed it in the Jazz game. Like 3 minutes into the Jazz game, I was there at that game. He had his hands on his knees, like gasping for air. And he was playing sick. I know that. That's probably been something that he's had to navigate. Non-COVID. He's just been sick. But I saw it in the Jazz game. I've seen it in the last couple games. He just hasn't had that burst. He hasn't had that same fire.
It could very well be the illness. Barton had a nasty one. And then even in non-athlete news, I think both Adam and I just got the normal flu this year. That thing sucked. That thing was horrible. So, I mean, I don't have any experience playing through it against the Utah Jazz or anything, but I'm sure like Aaron has looked like a somewhat taxed and depleted player.
I can't believe it's taken us this long to get to the DeMarcus Cousins piece, in part because it hasn't happened yet. So we're talking about a thing that, I mean, by all accounts, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. And my guess is the timing on it has as much to do with the Nuggets looking at their schedule as anything and saying, okay, when do we want DeMarcus to join the team? But it does look like he's going to join the team as a backup center. You guys talked about this a little bit in the pregame show. Here's what I'll say about it. The Nuggets are struggling so much right now that to me I'm beyond just okay with it. I'm a little bit excited for it. DeMarcus Cousins is a really good player, especially on the offensive end. He's got that great relationship with Michael Malone. There's an opportunity for DeMarcus to really break out. And again, break out at a moment in time when Denver desperately needs like to spell Jokic. They've got 5 games in 8 days coming up. So there's an opportunity for him to provide some of that. Maybe Jokic rests a game even on one of these ones, you know, just on a back-to-back. It's like, hey man, it's a long season, whatever. And maybe that allows for it. So to me, I'm excited for it. The biggest concern is obviously chemistry in the locker room. I just don't know. My concerns for that over the course of a 10-day are very, very low.
Yeah, and I've got to think that's what this big meeting with Tim Connelly yesterday was in place to kind of hammer out. making sure, you know, DeMarcus Cousins wasn't going to be a problem in the locker room. And look, I love it. Like you said, Adam, I think it's kind of a no-brainer, to be totally honest. We've been talking about how they need a backup center all season, and this is the closest they've had to one. Like, DeMarcus Cousins is a center. I think he can spell Jokic. And I think the Nuggets are looking at Jokic right now and being like, this guy, there's so much on his shoulders. He's getting hacked every game. Teams are being super physical with him, throwing double, triple teams at him. We've just got to get him some rest. We've got to be able to spell him a little more than we are right now. And Cousins, you know, he's a big body who can play minutes. And so I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they're looking at Jokic and being like, it's kind of unfair to ask him to do this for the entire season. So I think it's a little bit of an insurance policy on that.
The big question, though, Vogt, is, you know, Denver has been really tight about who they let into the culture, yep, right? And DeMarcus Cousins, typically a 10-day guy like Austin. I saw somebody said, yeah, but so was Austin Rivers. It's true, but also a little different in that Austin Rivers came in. There was nobody on the roster. He's not competing with. It would be a little bit more like if Austin Rivers came in to back up Jamal Murray or something like this. But even more to the point, if at one point in their careers, those two were considered rivals. Sure. Jokic and DeMarcus Cousins, rivals. You know, who's the more talented guy? Yeah, we of course know the where's Jokic. I'm looking for him when he was playing with, I don't know, who are his teammates in that game? Steph Curry, yeah. Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson. Yeah, so we all know that there's like a little bit of a competition there. And I imagine one of the things when Tim Conley, the report came out, Tim Conley's going to meet with him. We got to talk to him first. I imagine part of this was, we're bringing you in here to support Jokic. And that's a tough pill to swallow, honestly, for a guy who says like, hey, I'm as good as him. I just haven't been as healthy, but I'm as good as him. It's like, hey, we don't care whether you are or are not. You are here to be his assistant. Right. And that's the thing that I think makes this a little bit more tense.
And I'm sure maybe that was something Denver wanted to talk about. It's also possible Cousins camp wanted to have conversations about, hey, if we play well, what's that roster spot looking like? And who knows, right? I mean, he's in a slightly different position than the Rajon Tuckers in the world in terms of beggars can't be choosers and all that. I will say, as far as locker room questions and concerns, this is Michael Malone's music, right? I mean, if first of all, with just any player, but also specifically Michael Malone, who is famously the only coach Boogie Cousins seems to have liked, especially during his Sacramento tenure. So that relationship, I think, is what you fall back on here. And then there's also trust that it just went well in Milwaukee, right? A contender that signed him felt very comfortable with the way he approached the whole thing. So I think there's plenty of reason right now to say, absolutely, let's try this.
So I see this comment, who cares? Marquise Chris punched Luka, now they are teammates. The thing is, Marquise Chris was never compared to Luka. Like those guys, there's no question about what the hierarchy is between those guys. And there's no question either with Jokic and Boogie. But the difference is, like, Boogie is not that far removed from being a very, very, like, all-star caliber player. It's a little bit like Carmelo. Honestly, the better comp would be when Carmelo was in Oklahoma City. And remember, it was like, if he would have accepted the role he has now and had with Portland or this or that, maybe he would have never had that part where he drops out. DeMarcus Cousins, by all accounts, has accepted. Like, I think he has accepted that. I mean, right, he's not on a team or this or that. It's just, does it mess with the vibe a little bit of a team when you have a guy like that on the roster here? I don't know. I trust the culture. I just think that this is the biggest test we've seen. But the Nuggets wouldn't pull the trigger unless they felt confident.
Right.
It is a test, but also it's like, who cares in this type of season? It's like, who really, really cares that much? Like, I think, you know, if it goes badly, a lot of it, you know, could be on Malone, because Malone has been signaling throughout this entire season publicly pretty much that, like, I want DeMarcus Cousins on this team. He's had a couple quotes where he said, like, yes, like, DeMarcus should be in the league right now. He's a very talented player. He had another quote earlier this season when he was just talking about centers and how some teams have the luxury of having true centers on their roster and some don't. He's wanted DeMarcus on this team. At least that's what I've taken away from his quotes. And, you know, if it doesesn't work, just a 10-day deal, great. Cut bait with him. If it does work, Yeah, like I could see them signing him for the rest of the season as their backup center.
It reminds me so much too of, it could remind me of the Isaiah Thomas thing where Malone and Isaiah Thomas had a good history together and it's like, okay, bring him in. And Malone did a good job of giving him a chance, but not like giving him more than a deserved chance.
He played it perfectly.
Played it perfectly. And I wonder if he's going to be in the same situation with DeMarcus Cousins where it's like, hey, that's my guy. But if we come in here 2-3 games and it's like, hey, man, he's actually making this bench that's already getting murdered every time they're out there. Now they're getting murdered even worse. Yeah. I do trust Malone to say, one, it's a 10-day, but also just to say like, all right, we got to pull the plug on this one. So Malone has a little bit of clout on that end as well. So I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be a positive with an outside chance of being a huge positive, which would be exciting. Let's take a break. On the other side, Robert Flom is going to be joining us to help us preview James Ennis's debut. That's why he's here. That, and I guess we could talk about the Clippers as well.
We are into the playoffs in the National Football League. College football heading to national championship. DraftKings Sportsbook has an unbelievable offer to get all fans in on the action. This exciting time on the football calendar. New customers can bet just $5 on any football team to win their game. If they do, you win $200 in free bets. It's a great time to sign up with DraftKings Sportsbook. Bet $5 on any team to win their game. If they do, you win $200 in free bets. Of course, DraftKings Sportsbook customers can also bet on football with same-game parlays. You can get those for NBA games as well. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code DNVR. Bet just $5 on any football team. College or pro. Win $200 in free bets if they're victorious. That's promo code DNVR this week at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Also, sexy pizza. You definitely had it if you were at the Broncos tailgate this Saturday. Heard that tailgate was off the hook. It was the last one of the season. But they'll be back next season for sure.
They will be back next season. The Broncos will be back.
No, I meant the tailgate. If you didn't get in on the tailgate this year, we'll have them again next season. Sexy Pizza, they got a bunch of locations throughout Denver. They've got 5 of them in Colorado, including one in Trinidad. Cap Hill, South Pearl, Jefferson Park, Park Hill. You can go to sexy.pizza, www.sexy.pizza. Use code SEXYDNVR, SEXYDNVR. Yes, we came up with that promo code. You get 20% off your order when you use SEXYDNVR. Get 20% off at sexy.pizza.com.
Kale, I think it was still going up and down because you had echo cancellation on. I think. I was trying to figure it out. Then I went and got, I just changed it off and it worked. But that's what you get for being so vain, according to the chat. According to the chat, people just say shit. Do you ever notice? Anybody ever like wants a horror show? Just read any of our comments. This is a horror show, absolute horror show. All right, we're going now to bring on from the 213 Hoops blog, a Clippers blog dedicated to the Clippers. It's the rich homie Flom, aka Robert Flom. What's happening, Robert?
Not much, man. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good, man. We're just analyzing the DeMarcus Cousin Nuggets, as we expected the season to go. I'm sure you are enjoying a chaotic season as well with the Clippers. But first, before I get some Clippers talk in, I got to get the full scouting report on James Ennis, longtime Clipper.
James Ennis, I was listening to your show on the Bull Bull trade, and a bit of a similar situation there in reverse, where I think James Ennis is a much more competent veteran than the guys the Clippers have at the back of their roster. But those guys are on guaranteed deals. They just didn't have room for him. He only played 2 games. Honestly, he looked better than about half the Clippers that have played this year.
Wow.
He played like 24 minutes, but you know, he's had, you know, 5-6 seasons of NBA experience. He knows where to be on the court. You know, he's a big guard, can play defense. Okay. 3-point shooter. Honestly, if they'd kept him somehow and continued playing in minutes, I would have been pretty happy, but that, that the scouting report was 24 minutes in pretty terrible Clippers lineup.
So we'll get to that then now, because I mean, every team, I know fan bases get locked into just paying attention to their own team and like, oh my God, but the Clippers have had their own disaster going on here over the last little bit. What can you tell us about the Clippers over the last 10 games or so?
Oh man. They're not playing Kawhi Leonard. They're not playing Paul George. Luke Kennard, who's been their best three-point shooter, is out. Isaiah Hartenstein, your old friend, who has
our
been,
guy,
by advanced metrics, maybe the Clippers' best player this year. Remarkable. Right.
We've heard. Trust us, we've heard.
he is also out. So the Clippers have to say they're starved for offensive firepower is being very polite. Marcus Morris is their number one option. It's not ideal. Reggie Jackson is running point. You know, a guy who's had some big moments, a guy who, you know, certainly has iron nerves, can shoot, not a guy you really want leading your team main ball handling duties. So their offense is just not good. It's not good right now. Their defense remains quite good. They have a lot of perimeter defenders. Nick Batum just came back. He's been their best defender. Yeah. Ivica Zubac, not an all defense guy, but he's, you know, a competent starting center. Terrence Mann is a good defender. Amir Coffey is kind of the undersung hero of the Clippers this year. A guy who's started for them the past couple games and has been quite good. So defensively, I'd say they're still, you know, they're hanging in there. They're pretty good. Offensively, they are a mess. They do not generally generate good looks, and when they do, they don't make them. So.
And there's nobody coming back for this game, right? I mean, it's kind of the same group they've been rolling with.
It doesn't seem like it. Hartenstein has been getting in some pregame workouts and stuff, but I don't think he'll be back. And I believe Luke Kennard is still in health and safety protocols. Even if he does clear, my guess is he'd need a game to recondition. So, yeah, they're out, and Paul George is way out, and Kawhi Leonard, you know, who knows.
So I have, here's one thing when you were just talking, I've completely forgot about, wasn't even thinking about till now. And now I'm terrified of, is I forgot this is the Marcus Morris game. You know, like we've been waiting for this for a while now before Marcus Morris to match up. Vote. Do you anticipate any shenanigans?
Sorry. I was going to say that Rob just called EG out of the woods with that Hartenstein shout out. And here he is. Sorry, what was your question?
Not talking about Jonah Bolden anymore. He's on to Hartenstein. Go ahead. I said, what do you think with Marcus Morris? Do you fear at all, you know, that becomes a storyline? I've completely spaced it. I hadn't even thought about it for so long.
I don't fear it. I'm sure Marcus cares very much. I'm sure he's upset about it. I'm also sure, like, he's not going to come out, drop gloves at opening tip and start swinging. Like, they're going to play a basketball game. Do I think he could get a little chippy at times with Jokic? Maybe, possibly. I'm sure he's still less than thrilled about it. But I also think, like, we are so far past this that even a Morris twin probably knows to retaliate now. I think.
Didn't we just have a tweet? Are we past it? I'm going to say I don't think we're past it. Harrison, do you anticipate anything?
I could see it getting a little chippy. Sure. I could see, you know, Morris throwing a couple elbows, trying to rough Jokic up a little, trying to get under his nerves, because we know that's the only way to beat him. The only way to beat Nikola Jokic is to get him literally thrown out of the game. Yeah. So I could see it being chippy, definitely.
What do you think?
Yes, chippy, sure. Marcus Morris, as I said, he's their number one option, which is less than ideal. I don't think he would want to get thrown out of the game. I don't think he's going to do anything crazy. But as you said, the best way to beat the Nuggets is to get Jokic off the court. And if they can somehow get him in foul trouble, if they can get him kicked out of the game, that's probably the only way they have a good chance of winning this. But I really wouldn't expect much. Maybe some words, just some stupid banter.
So yeah, some stupid banter. What do you anticipate for the Clippers this season? Let's forget the playoffs, because I know that the Kawhi question is really the whole playoff thing, but we don't know that, just like we don't really know with Jamal. But if we just try to predict the next 2 months of the season, do you feel like the Clippers are close to going on a run?
No. Their January schedule is really bad. They actually had a pretty good schedule to start the year and were not able to take advantage because of all the injuries and the COVID situation. They were supposed to kind of fatten up, and they haven't. Really, the main reason they're still in the playoff hunt is because the teams below them keep losing. You know, the Spurs, Blazers, Kings, Pelicans crew, I mean, none of those teams are very good. I think the Clippers are kind of just more competent because Ty Lue is a great coach, and they do have good defenders, and defense does win you games in the NBA. But even with Kennard and Hartenstein coming back probably pretty soon, the schedule is rough. They're trying to win maybe like one every three games just to kind of stay in that 9-10 play-in race. And then hopefully Paul George comes back and his elbow is healthy because he did not look right. He came back for two games, was not shooting the ball well, and then left again. And, you know, you hope to get him back maybe late January, early February, and then get back to around 500. But a run is very unlikely, barring one of their young players turning into a superstar.
What about like a sneaky tank job, Robert? Like, is bottoming out kind of on the horizon for you guys, do you think?
So it's something I have not quite advocated, but I've thrown out there. The problem is they've given their picks to Oklahoma City.
Right. All of them. Yeah.
Yes. You know, they could, you know, kind of not play veterans who aren't in their future. Eric Bledsoe probably not going to be a part of next year or future Clippers teams, and they're playing him a lot. They could go and play like Brandon Boston Jr., who's had some good games, Keon Johnson.
Nuggets killer.
Yeah.
I hate Boston so much. It's like my least favorite type of player.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a chucker. He's a chucker.
Total chucker.
But yeah, I mean, that is like the option is like if they really don't think it's in them this year, if they don't think they have a run, they could play their young guys. It won't matter for draft picks, but maybe they get the young guys more experience.
Okay,
but
yeah.
I can't see it. I don't think they're going that way.
Okay. It is. I mean, if we look at these two teams played each other not that long ago, and the game was very close, 103-100, if you recall, even though they didn't have at that time even Paul George or what have you. In fact, they were pretty small. Yeah, they didn't have Hartenstein as a backup either. That was a grinded out game. And I think part of it was, I actually think that game was the game that Ty Lue's a great coach, that teams started to really stunt and say, well, we dare you guys to beat us from outside, especially attacking closeouts. I thought Ty Lue was maybe the first coach to recognize this is how you beat this version of Denver. And since then, Denver has had a little bit of a grind. So this is a game that I look at. I just think Ty Lue is a great coach, one of the best in the league. And Denver right now is very easy to scheme against. So right now, so I feel like this game is going to be a sneaky close one for Denver.
It might be close. I do think, you know, the Clippers before winning yesterday against the Hawks, who are just in real down bad mode right now, were blown out a few times. But I do think it is tough to blow them out because their defense is so good. And I would expect them to deploy a similar game plan. You know, Jamal Murray's out, Michael Porter's out. The Nuggets don't have a ton of shooting. They're going to make, you know, Facu Campazzo, even Monty Morris, who's a good 3-point shooter, not really a high volume guy. Like, take 10 threes, Monty Morris. Like, will you? And see what happens. But it's just so tough to beat Jokic when you don't have a star player. I'm very skeptical.
I think even the are they good shooter part is almost overstated, because Monte, Facu, these guys, if you're not going to do the I dare you to shoot, we're going to stand in the paint. What you're going to do is you're going to run them off the line, and you're going to say either make a contested three, lightly contested, but nonetheless sped up, you know, shoot it quickly, or you're going to have to drive into the trees and make a play and finish. And those guys, you know, Monte can do it okay, you know, pretty good, but Facu, you know, even Rivers, like those guys have had their struggles at this season. So that's the part to me that makes that defensive scheme work. So I think it'll be a close one. Do you have a prediction for how you think this game's going to go?
I do think the Nuggets will probably win. I don't really have I would probably guess pretty low scoring, maybe like 107-100, probably similar to last time, honestly.
Yeah,
that's probably how I'd guess. I will say the Clippers last couple games have gone with a bigger starting lineup.
Interesting.
Amir Coffey at shooting guard, Marcus Morris at small forward, and Nick Batum at power forward. So that could play into the strategy you're mentioning. If they, you know, if Monty Morris and Facu Campazzo are going against all guys who are 4 or 5 inches taller and have probably 30 or 40 pounds on them, could be tough.
Big length, throw length out there, and then that makes sense.
Yeah, but the Clippers bench is still just not very good right now. And I mean, I know the Nuggets bench has had its fair share of issues, so it could be a disaster. Second quarter could just be some real terrible basketball.
But this is a super important
game. Turn the game off at that point.
This is a super important game. If you look at the Clippers right now in January, so they had a home game against Minnesota, they lost, went on the road to Phoenix and lost, home game against Memphis and lost, and then they just beat Atlanta at home, and then you have Denver at home. After that, at New Orleans, at San Antonio, home versus Indiana, at Denver, at Philly, at New York, at Washington, at Orlando, at Miami, at Charlotte, at Indiana. They play, what is that, 11 of their next 12 on the road or something like that? Like, my brutal. God.
It is the Grammy road trip, and the Grammys are now no longer happening there. So,
there's like a short list of teams that are like in the Nuggets' tier for just like constantly screwed over.
And like, are you the fifth ranked tenant in your building? The Nuggets and Clippers can find some compromise there.
Yeah, it is. It's rough. You have so many former Clippers. I mean, DeMarcus Cousins, former Clipper.
former Clipper. Who else? Give us all the Clippers.
Green. Are you Jermichael Green stands?
Clippers fans really like Jermichael Green, I will say. I mean, he's a great locker room guy. I think all media members really like dealing with him. And he was a big part of those teams. He is not as good as he was a couple years ago, but his ability to play small against the Warriors in that series was a big reason they won those two games. I would say there's probably more Austin Rivers fans than J. Mike fans, though. People here love them some Austin Rivers. If you've seen the photo of him in it was game 6 against Portland in the 2016 playoffs, he has this gigantic black eye. There's like blood dribbling down. He looks like he's been in a boxing match, and he scored like 24 points that game.
That photo's definitely hanging up in Austin's house. I can guarantee you.
Dude, he owns Portland in the playoffs. Austin Rivers.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's incredible. Well, that was good stuff, Robert. Anything else we should know about the Clippers ahead of tomorrow's game?
Not really. Like I said, watch for Amir Coffey. He had a career high tied last game, 21 points, 5 threes. I wrote about him pretty in depth on Friday. He has been really good. Not a guy who will burn you much as a scorer, but he can play defense. He's a great connector. Doesn't hold on to the ball very long. Moves quickly, makes nice cuts. And yeah, if the Clippers are going to win, it's going to be defense and trying to get out in transition. And using their size and length, but I would predict a Nuggets win.
Hopefully Hartenstein is out for one more game. It doesn't start coming back till this road trip for theirs, because giving an actual like tall, you know, guy that can punish you with his size big to go up against Jeff Green as the backup center would be really rough. You never know, but that could be
so
one thing.
Bad if there was a Hartenstein game, that would be terrible.
Oh, it'd be so fitting. By the way, Hartenstein's funny. Like, you know, he didn't get a lot of minutes here and then he leaves and he's had nothing but great things to say about his time in Denver. So whatever reason, he doesn't seem to be holding too much of a grudge, at least publicly. So for whatever that's worth.
Can we ask Rob about one more former Clipper?
Sure.
Rodney Magruder.
Oh my
God. The newest
God.
Denver Nugget.
Rodney Magruder, Jeff Green. You have like six former Clippers on your team. Rodney Magruder was a sad bust. The Clippers.
A sad bust, not just a regular bust, a sad bust.
Everyone was sad about it.
It was sad. They actually got him through like this very adept cap management thing. They have a lot of really good cap guys.
Yeah, I remember.
He was waived at the end of a season, and they got him so that they could re-sign him later. They brought him back, and actually for the bubble season, he was on the Clippers team that lost to the Nuggets, as we all remember, in the bubble. And he was supposed to be a key rotation guy. He could not shoot. He could not score. The defense was solid. Like, if you just need an energy defense guy, he will give you that. But the scoring, the offensive game is brutal.
I was watching some of his highlights. He's got a janky shot for a guy regarded as a shooter. He's got a very weird looking shot. Also, his nickname, the Scavenger.
The Scavenger? That's like not really a compliment.
But when you watch him, you can kind of see it.
He's a hustle scavenger. Guy. He's scavenger. A hustle energy guy. If you, they will leave him open for three, and yeah.
I remember when I was young, I first learned the T-Rex was a scavenger. It was crushing. I pictured him hunting these animals. You thought, like, okay, for sure.
You were just never the same after.
I was never the same. It was like when Pluto is no longer a planet. You're like, well, then I'm so disappointed. I was excited for the longest. Yeah, T-Rex. Not impressive. That does it for today. Guys, if you have not already, please consider becoming a DNVR member. It's just $5 a month. You won't even notice it out of your bank account. But what you will notice is all of this great content you get up on thednvr.com. Don't forget to follow the Rich Homie Flom, the best handle in all of Twitter, and 213 Hoops if you want to read about the Clippers. Thanks so much, Robert, for joining us. Everybody else, we'll see you guys tomorrow.